Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the New Era Sense podcast. This is episode number 16, and I actually can't believe it. It's gone so fast. But as always, Brennan is joining me. So good to have you, dude. And how you doing today?
Doing well, man. Just having my morning coffee, kind of catching up. Sens game day. I'm ready to see us play Winnipeg. So I'm pretty fired up about that. As we play our first of 10 games against the Jets. But yeah, doing pretty good. Gotta love Tuesdays. How are you?
Good. Same thing, man. No coffee this morning. I should probably get on that, but I'm just hanging out. And you know what? I'm getting ready for tonight. I actually just adjusted my fantasy roster, so I'm all set to go on that. Well, I'll probably place a bet here for Pro Line and try to make some money tonight. But I got the Sens tonight, I think. Back-to-back for the Jets. I don't necessarily see them doing too well without Line A as well. They looked kind of weak, in my opinion, last night against the Leafs. So if the Sens can capitalize on that tonight, should be fun.
Yeah, no, I think it should be good. I think that they can definitely take advantage of the back-to-back situations. I think that's going to be a big thing this year is those back-to-back games. And just this, like, especially, like, we're not coming off a back-to-back. Winnipeg is here against the Leafs. So, and Hellebuck played last night, too. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Hellebuck plays again tonight, knowing that guy's workload. But I think we can really take advantage of it. That's the nice thing about having a young team with young legs is that not only on back-to-back nights are we going to be better equipped, but on nights where teams are coming off back-to-backs and they might be a little tired or beat up, we can really jump on that. Pretty big loss the lineup tonight, though. Yeah. I think everyone's favorite player to watch, Timmy Stützle, unfortunately out day-to-day. It doesn't sound like it's going to be anything too serious, but I think that's definitely a bit of a letdown. That wasn't the best news to hear. I wasn't stoked to be putting him on my day-to-day on my fantasy lineup, but you know what, it's too bad that he's out. Hopefully it's not long term. And I don't know, what do you think of the injury? Do you think maybe he was roughhousing with Norris and Brady in the house? Maybe they're just some tackle football and he went down, or do you think it was something that happened on the ice?
Yeah. There's a few jokes on Twitter going around. He fell off the top bunk while playing with the boys or on the trampoline or whatnot. But no, I Derek brought up a good point earlier. He said that Timmy still had his hand wrapped since his injury before the World Juniors. And obviously it's still present. And you look at the last game against the Leafs, he was in sort of visible pain with that Muzzin cross check that when he went down. And I don't know if that's something to do with it. My guess would be that's the case, but it is unfortunate to see Timmy being injured because he just scored his first NHL goal. His confidence is probably at an all-time high right now, and just to see him draw out of the lineup is unfortunate. But my guess would be that obviously they did say it's just a day-to-day injury, so not too worried on that front, but I feel like the NHL should take a look at cross checks more. Just the way we've seen that play with Muzzin cross checking Timmy in front of the goal and have that not be called, especially, you know, just a few days prior, Sportsnet says the Leafs are calling for the NHL to be less linear on cross checks, and that literally happens, and there's no coverage on Timmy on that front. So it's sort of a biased feeling, I guess, because I'm a Sens fan and I do feel like they should talk about it more often. But I was sort of pissed that happened and no call was on the ice. And here we are, Timmy's, you know, injured this game. So you'd have to assume that something came of it. And maybe that was the reason why. But hey, who knows? I'm happy to see Galchenyuk in the lineup today.
I mean, I'm just hoping that our boys Austin Watson and Eric Goodbranson and Josh Brown are taking note of that. And I mean, like I said, you know just how much I'm craving a Battle of Ontario to be up and wild again. And those two games to start the year were great. They were both great games. Ottawa really was kind of out of it for 50 minutes of the last game, but there's still parts where they looked really, really good. Yeah. But yeah, and I if anything, maybe that cross check can really spark some physicality. Could really kind of maybe next game we start that fourth line and or whatever line. I guess we don't really have one four lines. They're probably just all kind of because any line can play a lot of ice time on any given night. But maybe Austin Watson can go out there and take Jake down and or Buzzin' Jake Muzzin, and we can finally start having that aggression and that I don't know. I miss that part of hockey. I agree. If they're going to take out hits from behind and really kind of penalize like head hits, they should probably look a little more cross checks too, because yeah, like at the end of the day, you're hammering someone with a stick, you're moving them. There's really, I don't know how it's good. Different than hitting someone. Sorry. Yeah.
It doesn't feel good. That's for sure.
No.
Right.
So. Oh, yeah, I can definitely injure, but yeah, if anything, hopefully Tim gets a quick recovery and so touching back on that goal, I don't know that there's too many people that HL could score like that, let alone in their second game of the year. I know we posted a video on the New York Sports account of Batherson and Norris being real impressed by that hand-eye coordination on Stutzel. Even Jack Campbell, the Leafs goalie, came out and said, the only thing I could think of other than I should have had that is I just want to shake his hand. That was a heck of a play. What a young talent. It's good for the league. You can count on me be better on that one next time. Well, I don't know what else he could really do on that. It looked like he had most of the net covered, but honestly, yeah, like I think that's just it. Timmy's good for the league. He's starting to get the recognition that he deserves as being good for the league. And I think that was really kind of our first taste in the NHL of, yeah, this kid's skill is translating. It's here. And it's kind of sweet that it was against the Leafs too, because I know I've got a lot of buddies who are Leafs fans, and it's kind of good to look at them and be like, yeah, you like our 19-year-old? Looks pretty solid, doesn't he?
Yeah, I wish it would have happened on his birthday the day prior, but I mean, I'm not gonna be too picky about that. He did score against the Leafs, so I'm happy with that otherwise. But you know what that goal reminded me of? It's sort of like, you know, when you in soccer, when you someone receives a pass and they ball control it when it comes in the air, sort of reminded me of that, because like the puck's floating in the air and he obviously he figured it out and shot at the right time. And Timmy obviously played soccer before, so I'm wondering if some of that skill comes from that. But it was a very nice goal, and I don't think there's that many first NHL goals on that level. So I'm pretty pumped. I know I screamed at the TV when that happened, and I couldn't believe it. I was sort of hoping the Sens would come back and maybe win the game just for the heck of it. But nonetheless, I'm still happy he scored his first, and first of many, that's for sure.
Man, yeah, like honestly, even like after that goal, I was riding such a high that after the game, like my girlfriend was like, "Why are you so happy? Ottawa lost." I was like, "I mean, Timmy's goal was unreal." And I love that you said that about the man. Like, I love that you mentioned that about the soccer, because it's such a, like, there's not many people in the NHL. There's not many players that I have seen. Like, you see Patrick Kane and the way that he stick handles the puck, and it's because he grew up playing lacrosse. Like, that's the way that he has that hand speed. It's because he was an incredible lacrosse player, and that's why he's able to stick handle the way that he does. And like Timmy, it's so true, because you mentioned the soccer thing, and like I remember even watching Draft Dynasty reports when Tim was getting drafted when he was coming up, and they mentioned, he was like, Yannick, Great scout, by the way. Unfortunately, won't be doing the videos anymore now that he's hired on to the Montreal scouting staff. But I remember him talking about, like, oh, like, you can tell this kid played soccer because of his foot speed and the way that he skates, and like the way that he's so agile, and just the way that he can like get off on his feet so quickly and just move over and like be able to move, like, just to have that lateral movement and just be able to move like those quick strides and like just those quick feet. It's like, yeah, that of a soccer player. And then, yeah, like you mentioned with the hand eye and like just those coordination and reaction skills that you also get from soccer. Like, it's just, it's really interesting to see how different skilled players play the game. And the fact that he kind of translates that in a way, like you said, that's just so similar to soccer. It's really, really cool. And it's different. And I think it's just kind of one of those things that really just shows just how different he is and how skilled he is. And it's like, also, it's something that I think translates really well, because it's like those are skills that are finesse skills. Those are things that it's not really something that a lot of people would be able to develop. Like if you're not good at soccer, if you don't have that quickness and like that, those motor functions, like those be able, that ability to move your feet quick, keep up on plays quick, and then also be able to react to things so quickly. Like that's not something that you're going to develop overnight. So yeah, I mean, obviously we're all fired up about Tim, but it's just a cool light to look at in. And I'm happy that you mentioned that, because kind of just got me thinking.
And you know what? Last year, actually, this is pretty funny, but we had a guy, Colin White, who scored with his head as a headbutt goal. Brady Tkachuk's first NHL goal, that if I'm not wrong, went off his feet. Yeah, that should have counted. It just seems like every player on our team has a knack for some soccer skills. So maybe Timmy from Germany can just show them a few things. But I'm really excited. And speaking of Colin White, I'm sort of upset that, you know, he's still scratched for this game. I thought he had a decent game last game. He looked like he had a lot of effort, like he really had something to prove out there. I thought that, okay, they'll give him a chance again just to see how he comes off of that game. But obviously that's not the case. And these small draws in today, and Galchenyuk goes in to replace Timmy. So we'll get a good look of Galchenyuk today. Just on Colin White, I am a little bit upset to see that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, man. Like, it's hard, especially when this is a guy that we have locked in long term and we're paying him, just under $5 million a year. And, I mean, like, I'm a believer in Colin White. Like, I think that he's still going to be a hell of a player, but like, obviously, like, DJ Smith has come out and he has this, you got to earn every minute. You got to earn every shift. I don't care if you're making an entry level salary or if you're making 4.25 or 4.75 a year. I mean, like, it's one of those things where it's hard. Like, there's definitely been like a couple of decisions where, as much as like I do respect what DJ Smith's trying to do, like it does kind of sting a bit, because like I like Colin White. I want to see Colin White succeed, like, and I want to see him have the opportunity to succeed. And I felt like last year that was he might not have gotten the most opportune situations. And I know that like 2 years ago he was so good. Like, he was so good when he was playing with Stone and when Duchesne was still on the team. And it's too bad that he hasn't been able to kind of find his knack and draw into the lineup. And I hope, like, it seems like he's been really professional in his approach to it. Like, you know what, like, this happens. I just got to work my way back. And I hope that he can kind of take it as like a fire under his ass instead of a slap in the face. And like, because obviously, like, people react to things differently. And I hope that you can just see it as motivation instead of him getting shot down. But yeah, it's tough. He seems like such a likable guy. Seems like he's really great in the room. And like, he has that skill. Like, we saw it in the World Juniors. We saw it 2 years ago in the NHL. Like, he's there. He has that ability, and he has a really good two-way game. So fingers crossed. I am excited to get a look at Galchenyuk. And it looks like he'll be playing on the second power play unit as well. So I'm really happy that they're kind of putting him into a role where he can show off some of his offensive prowess. I felt like that was something that happened in Pittsburgh, was he was put in the lineup, but he wasn't really, like, he was given a bit of an opportunity to succeed, but then he bounced down the lineup so quickly that he couldn't really, like, the thing is too, like, that was the first time in his career that he probably wasn't playing on the first or the second line. And like, when I say career, like, I mean, like, since this kid was probably like 13 years old, like, he's been like Galchenyuk was a stud in the OHL. And like, before then he would have been a stud in AAA. He's always been playing first line minutes. So to try to adapt on a team where all of a sudden now you're playing like third, fourth line minutes, it's hard. So hopefully they put him in a role where he's able to succeed. Like, hopefully he's in a scoring role and something that he's used to, and he's set up for success, because I think he could have a real good year. I think he could be a real good piece. So I guess a bit of the silver lining for Stutzle going out is Galchenyuk drawing in, and fingers crossed that he's able to make an impact.
Yeah, you know what? I'm excited to see Galchenyuk, just because I think my idea of Galchenyuk is him in Montreal, and I still think that's the same player in there. I just think that he has to be utilized the right way, and just to see him scratch the first few games, I was sort of upset because I thought that they would at least give him a legit chance this year, sort of like what they did with Duclair last year, just giving him a bigger role, and hopefully he can, you know, make something out of it. And if you want to move him at the deadline, then at least, you know, he's had some value throughout the season behind him. So I'm excited. I hope he proves himself this game, just to show that he's still capable of being a very good NHL player. And I still think he can be. And like you said, he wasn't really utilized the right way in Pittsburgh, and same with Arizona, I guess. So I'm excited to see what comes of it. And even if he can find chemistry with some of our guys, I think that's important too, because our team is so young and it's a bunch of fresh new faces. And I think it's all about finding chemistry. Some lines, you know, haven't necessarily been doing too well. I think the Stutzla, Stepan, and Dadonov line has only played like 10 minutes of 5-on-5 time together. So that's not a lot of time to gel and sort of form some chemistry. So I'm hoping for the next few games we find a click for some of these lines and things at least gel, but we'll see, dude. I think it's make or break for some guys, especially like Cedric Paquette. He hasn't necessarily had the best two games, and I was sort of upset to see him still be in the lineup, but I guess it is what it is. I don't think we can waive him, though, right? I don't think we can send him to the taxi squad.
We wouldn't be able to without sending him through waivers.
Exactly.
But like, I mean, like, he can still get healthy scratched, right? Like, mm-hmm. Colin White is healthy scratched right now. So, like, without having to send him through waivers, without having to send him to the taxi squad. So, we do have, like, those extra spaces. So, like, I thought the same thing. I didn't understand why Paquette, like, hasn't been scratched yet. And, like, I get it. Like, I actually was a huge fan of his game in Tampa. Like, watching him play in Tampa, especially in the playoffs last year, like, I felt like he was such an impact player. He's not going to rip apart the score sheet by any means, but, like, he's just such a powerful player. And, like, that kind of player that you need to log some big minutes for you, like just a big guy who's able to go out, get the puck in deep and just kind of wear down the defenders on the other team. So I'm a big fan of his game and what he does, but I haven't felt like he's looked good in Ottawa by any means. He hasn't stood out. Even unfortunately, Dadonov, I feel like, hasn't been much of a standout in his first couple games. Obviously, he's still adjusting. He's coming off probably what is like one of the best lines in terms of scoring in the NHL when he was playing with Barkov and Huberdeau. Like, Huberdeau is one of the best playmakers. Barkov's one of the best two-way centers. So I think, like, obviously there's going to be an adjustment for him finding his groove in Ottawa. But yeah, I mean, like, honestly, I haven't been thrilled with Dadonov's play. I mean, hopefully changing up the lines a bit can spark that. Hopefully getting Galchenyuk into the lineup can spark that. I think that he has he'll have previous chemistry playing with Stepan when they were in Arizona. I know that they played on a line together. So hopefully that's something that that familiarity can translate decently well. You know what? It's second game of the season. Hard to be hard on anyone, which I think is also why it's just difficult to see, like, okay, why is White keep getting the plug pulled on him? Why isn't he pulling into games? Why aren't you giving him a chance? And then, I mean, at the same time, is what it is. One line I have been very impressed with, though, is that Tkachuk, the Norris Tkachuk or Chuck Norris Batherson line. I've thought that Drake Batherson's been one of the best players for the Sens, aside from maybe Nick Paul and obviously Matt Murray. But I think that that line has been great. I really like the way that Batherson and Tkachuk play together. I've been a fan of Norris as well. Like, I mean, I think that he still has a lot of room to grow. But I think just the way that line has been able to move the puck well has looked really good, and it shows a lot of promise considering just how young they are. So that's been a bright spot in my opinion. Nick Paul definitely, like, I mean,
oh,
I
yeah.
think, like, he's been great. I mean, it's funny when you watch him skate and it looks like his legs are breaking away from his body, but but yeah, like his shot and like just he's just been playing hard every shift. Like, I don't think I've seen a bad shift from the guy yet. So yeah, there's been some bright spots as well, but the season's young. What's been your overall thoughts on the lineup so far? Any standouts or guys that might not be as happy with as you thought you would be.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of Batherson. I think that guy's unreal, and I think he's only getting better every single year. I mean, he trains with Crosby and Marchand, I mean, and McKinnon, I think, right? So I do think he'll be a legit one, number one on the first line for, you know, even a good NHL team. I think he would slot in there in a few years. But a guy that I'm not too high on, though I won't write off because it's only been two games, is Josh Norris. I do think, you know, he fits on that line pretty well, but I just taking a look at him and, you know, using my eye test, I guess you could say, I haven't really seen him stand out too much. At times he looks like a little small, and I do feel like he's a little bit behind. But for me, the biggest takeaway while looking at the team is, damn, like, we really need a number one center, someone who's able to play against those top lines against some other NHL teams. And I don't know. I do think Josh Norris has the potential to be our number one guy, but right now I'm not too sure. I'm not sold on that. I do think another year in Belleville would be good for him. But then again, who do we have to replace him on that line? Not much. And so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I'd like to see him at least prove me wrong and do something on that line. I think he had some sort of chemistry already with Batherson and Tkachuk, which works, and who knows, as time goes on, it might get better. But yeah, that's definitely one guy I'm sort of worried about and keeping a tab on, because I'm not sure what comes of it. Another guy, obviously, like you said, Paul has been great, but my biggest standout so far is Matt Murray. We all have, you know, our opinions when it comes to him. We all figured he might not be in the best of shape coming into camp because he's obviously always injury prone. But man, that guy is the real deal. And I think if he can keep being consistent like that, and I think that's his biggest issue, is consistency and staying healthy. If he can stay healthy and be consistent like that, we have our number one goalie for, man, however long his contract's going. So I'm really happy with Matt Murray. I wonder when Marcus Hogberg's going to draw in the lineup. I'm not sure when they're going to do that. Maybe when we have back-to-backs, that would be the smart play. But yeah, overall, I'm very happy. Another guy I'm not sold on yet is Derek Stepan. I know he's been pretty decent, but at times I just don't think he should be playing with a guy like Stützle, who's so talented. And if, in my opinion, Stützle needs to be surrounded by other talented players who are, you know, fast paced and move really, really quickly. So we'll see. But like I said earlier, they've only had 10 minutes of 5-on-5 together. So there's still a lot of time to go. And DJ Smith obviously already thinks these things out, and I'm just here messing around. So I'm sure he's got it under control. We'll see what comes of me.
Yeah, no, I mean, fair enough. I mean, I definitely disagree with the Norris claim. That's just my opinion, though. And that's the beautiful thing about hockey, is that we all have different opinions and different fans. But like, I can understand what you're saying, and I can understand your reasoning for it. Because yeah, I mean, he hasn't been a standout by any means, but I think he's looked really good. Like, I think, like, in terms of, him coming up, only playing what I think it was like three games last season in the NHL. And the way that he's kind of gone into that role, and like, just the way that they've moved the puck, like, in my opinion, for like what his experience is, I think he looks solid. I think that like, I think, like, for me, I kind of take things with a grain of salt when it's a prospect coming up. Like, I'm just a little more forgiving in terms of like, okay, like if they make mistakes, or if they don't look quite as good on plays, like, for me, it's just more because it's like, okay, like, they're young. Like, there's a lot of nerves. Like, this is so much pressure being thrown on this kid. So I think like that's a big part of it for me. And I think that like, yeah, like, it's two games in, and I think that could be said about any of these players that we're talking about. But I think that like it's just an opportunity, and I think that like with the larger sample size, I think he looks pretty solid. I don't think he's a long term answer at number one. Like, I don't think he's a number one center in the NHL. I don't. Like, I think that he would be a solid number two, like a really good number two. And I agree that that need for a legitimate number one center is definitely still there. And that's one of the biggest roles on an NHL team that you need to have. Like you need to have that number one center that's going to be able to be thrown into every situation. So like, I definitely do agree that that need's still there, but I think for like, given his play and everything, I've been pretty happy with him. I think that that line's been a bright spot. And I think that they've clicked really well. So that's kind of my take on the Norris situation. I can also see what you're saying about Stepan. His play also, yeah, like it hasn't been phenomenal. And I agree, like Stutzel, I think would maybe thrive in like a bit of a faster pace line, like people that can kind of skate, like keep up to him in some ways. But I do think that Stepan brings a lot of value that fans or like people watching TV just don't see, because of all of the leadership qualities that he has. Like that guy just oozes leadership and like little tips and things like that he can help. And I think that it's kind of just more in this sense plans to have a veteran guy like that groom Stutzel in a way. We saw like if anyone tuned into that video of Stutzel in Germany, when he came to the men's league, like he learned a lot from the older guys. Like I think Wolf was one of his like big mentors. Yeah, Ben Smith. And like those were the guys that he played with, and he was able to take away a lot from that. And he seems like one of those guys that's kind of just like a sponge. Like he absorbs everything that he can, and he just wants to improve his game as much as he possibly can at all times. So I think that just like putting him on a line with a proven scorer in Dadonov, and then Stepan, who's been like around the league for how long? He's been in like, he's had a ton of playoff experience. Like this guy has been on like winning teams, and he's done really well. And like, he's been a consistent producer. So I think like, he's just been around long enough that he's able to kind of provide little tips and things like that. Like probably when they get off the ice, you can be like, hey, Timmy, like try this next time, check this out. And I think like, it's kind of more of like a mentor role than a play role. And like, I mean, yeah, I guess maybe it's not ideal in terms of watching them together, but like, I think that if it helps Timmy improve in the long run, I'm for it. It's just kind of one of those feeling out processes. It's such a weird time in Ottawa to be a fan, because it's like, yeah,
it really is. Eh? Yeah, it's definitely a weird time, but I mean, it's such an exciting time too, and it just sucks that we can't be in the stands to watch the team on the ice, which, you know, a lot of people would pay lots of money for. So, whatever, time will come, and we'll see how it is. But just touching on Stepan, I like your point. I do think he's a good vet presence, and I think he's one of the best guys you can bring in on a team, and maybe that's why he's worth a second round pick. Not necessarily because of his skill, but the personality he brings in on a team, I think is worth it. So I think it's very valuable, but at the same time, just thinking about the play on the ice, I do think we should at least shadow Stutzla with some good NHL guys. And I hope Dadonov finds his game soon and maybe find some chemistry with him. But just moving on, the next point is the power play. So we saw the second pairing of power play today. I don't know it by heart, but it doesn't look impressive. And no. Our power play hasn't looked too good the past two games. The zone entry is awful, in my opinion. So I hope to see something come of it. I hope to see some change in the next few games. The power play for me is always something I feel like the Sens have struggled with, and something I think DJ Smith really needs to figure out before it's too late, because we have guys to have a legitimate good power play. Like we have guys like Shabbat, Batherson, Tkachuk in front of the net, and Dadonov to snipe and Stutzla to make the passes. So we have all the tools, but the system itself isn't working. So what's your thoughts on the power play itself, and do you hope to see some changes when it comes to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that power play is tough. Like it's not something that can really be just built overnight. I think that like it takes a lot of practice, and that's something that the Sens haven't been able to do for 10 months, right? Like they kind of just got thrown into the situation, and obviously it needed significant improvement from where it was last year, and that's why guys like Dadonov were brought in, who are like incredible scorers on the power play. But I definitely think it needs work. The puck movement, like that stupid drop pass that they keep trying, that like every team knows exactly what they're doing when they do it. Like it's the most predictable, unpredictable play of all time. I think that it needs work. I think that they need a lot of practice, and I think that they just are probably just playing around with guys because they're like, okay, well, what we have now isn't working, so let's see if something else does. That second power play unit is Galchenyuk, Stepan, Connor Brown, Anisimov, and Riley tonight. So I don't know, maybe 5 years ago that would have been okay. but it ain't good. No. So yeah, I mean, you know what? They gotta try what they have, and what they were using currently wasn't really working. So we'll see. I think that they have the potential to have a great power play. Like I think that Dadonov in that bumper spot and Tkachuk in the front of the net, like if they can find the right guys to distribute the puck, I think that they can do a lot of serious damage. And I think Timmy Stützle is that guy. But I don't know. I don't know why they haven't really been. I think they're just kind of playing around with those lines. Obviously it needs to get figured out. Like they can't look as bad as they did against the Leafs. I don't think that the Leafs have an elite penalty killing unit by any means. So I think that they need to really figure things out moving forward on that front. I don't think that this is it. I don't think this is second power play unit is the answer. But hopefully it's just a sign that they're tweaking things and they're going to keep trying things until they find something that works. But I honestly think it's going to be until the end of this season, if it does, that we're going to have like a really effective power play unit, because just in my opinion, like I said, like it's not something that happens overnight. And we know how bad it was last year. And like, even though now we have the right guys, well, now we need them to mesh. We need them to learn to play together. I mean, like Edmonton's power play wasn't great a couple of years ago with McDavid and Drysdale. So and Nugent Hopkins too. So I think it's just one of those things where it's okay. Like let's figure out what works. Let's keep trying new things. It's something that's just going to be an ongoing process, and hopefully they can just respect that process and figure it out with the guys who are the best fit for the job. Because sometimes I think that sometimes I think DJ is just like, well, you work the hardest, so you deserve it. We're really okay. Well, no, like if they're not power play guys, they don't, like that's the thing. Like if they don't have that upside, like Connor Brown should not be on a power play. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but hopefully he gives the right guys the right chances and they're able to earn it in his eyes, and they can click and stay together long enough that they're able to develop plays and a plan that work.
You know what? It's so funny that you said that about DJ Smith, because Brent Wallace just tweeted, he says, DJ Smith on facing the Jets for the next three games. He says, well, if you're really competitive and you're playing really hard by game three, someone should be mad at you. If no one's mad at you by the third game, you're probably not playing hard enough. It's just, I think he really has the emphasis on working hard, and I think that's his thing. But there comes a point where you have to, you know, at least play the skillful guys and the guys who, you know, should be in the lineup by, you know, on paper or whatever. I think that a guy like Colin White just needs to be in the lineup for him to succeed, and just to boost his confidence. I think that's, you got him signed long term. You need to play him, dude. He has to find his game. So that's just my opinion, and we'll see what he does. But you can touch on that if you want.
No, sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it's just such a good point. It's like, well, how is this guy going to prove, like, that he can work hard if you don't give him a chance to play? Like, throwing him in once in a while, like, he's not warmed up. Like, it's not fair. Like, you're not really giving him a chance to prove himself if you're not even going to play the guy. Like, at least like make that decision a few games into the season. Like you said, like they are supposed to regard this guy as a key piece. He's supposed to be someone that they're going to be using like as a core player for the next 5 years. And like, this is how you're getting off on it. And like, I get it. Like I get the working hard thing. And like I said, like that is the biggest thing that I like in players. Like when I see a player who works hard, like a Jake Sanderson, who's getting to the rink every morning and he's working out, just trying to be as good as he can. Same thing as Timmy Stützle, like just trying to figure everything out that he possibly can. Like I love that. Like I respect that. But like, I also think that you need to give these guys the opportunity to prove that they can work hard. Like it just drives me crazy a little bit. Like he's supposed to be a core foundational piece, and like just historically, like I don't know that Ottawa has always been the best of their players. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, like you also don't want to create this situation where your players are upset at management or upset at coaching staff because they're being mistreated or things like that. And then they don't want to win for your team. Like it's the same as having a boss that treats you like shit. Do you really want to work hard there? Like, sorry, exactly. Maybe I'm just ranting a bit, but like I said, like I agree with the idea of what DJ is doing, but like, I guess like it kind of hits a little different for me with Colin White, because I'm just like, this is a guy that like you want to be an impact player for you. And like, if you sour relationships here, like that might just come back to bite you even worse. So, I really do think that they need to give him a proper chance.
Mm-hmm. And another guy I hope to see at least play some games in the next three games is Artem Zub, obviously the only gold medalist at the Olympics on our team. It doesn't say much because the Olympics back too good, but just a guy I hope to see. I mean, we don't know much about him, although that he had a good season in the KHL last year, was one of the best defensemen over there in the past season. So he's a guy I would love to see make this team. And you look at our team right now and you have Riley on that team, and nothing against him, but I just think you need to draw out Riley and at least have Willanen, guys like Zoo playing. Just switch it up and do something different. And I don't know what their plan is with them, but I really hope to see Zub and Willanen at least get more minutes. And I think it's important to at least, you know, get them some time on the ice. What's your thoughts on those two guys?
Yeah, I don't know. It's too bad. Like, Willanen had a really, really good camp, like, coming in. I was like, okay, like, this is going to be our guy. And we need puck movers on our D. Like, I get that Chabot is one of the better puck movers probably in the league, in my opinion. But, like, they're choosing to kind of use Chabot and Riley as the puck movers on their 60 system. And, like, Zaitsev, I think, has looked really good, which
Norris Trophy winner, man.
Yeah. Well, what's that stat, that advanced stat that came up? The analytics.
Yeah, him and Chabot are the best pairing defense pairing in the NHL at the moment.
Through two games.
So fingers crossed that keeps up. But
I think they probably went from 31st to first, given last year to this year. But yeah, so I mean, like, Zaitsev, I think, has looked pretty solid. But yeah, like, just I don't get it. Like, I'm not a huge Mike Riley fan. I think like that he does move the puck, but I just don't think he moves it as good as he possibly could. Like, I think that he's solid. Like, I think that he's a decent player, but like maybe a sixth guy, and like maybe he deserves to draw in, but like, he's not playing in a way that should prevent other players from getting that chance. So yeah, like I think like I was shocked that like Willanen wasn't given like a long stint, given how good he looked in the camp, apparently. So like, I would really love to see Willanen come in. Zub looks like from what I can tell about this kid, or guy, I guess he's a man, he's probably my age. But what I can tell about him, is he actually rushes pucks really well. When I watched some of his play in the KHL, like kind of when there was talks about, Ottawa signed him because there's nothing else going on. He looks like he carries the puck well. He goes into that offensive zone well. He pinches well. He's got a good shot. He scored like, I think, 7 goals in the KHL last year, and it was kind of like all with similar shots. I think he actually had more goals than he had assists. And I think like he skates really well, and he also defends really well. He plays like a really unique style, and so does Willanen. And in the way that and like unique from themselves, but like just in what they do well, is you don't see a lot of defense with this skill set. And it's like, he's good with transition, and he's good with skating up on guys. So yeah, I'm really keen to see Zub check in. I don't know when it'll be, but it will happen. And it sounds like they were impressed with him, but I mean, who knows who they're actually impressed with, given that they stated that Logan Brown and Anisimov had great camps, and then look what happened. So yeah, I'm sure, I'm hopeful he's going to check in. Hopeful Willanen is. I do think that there's going to be a lot of injuries this year, just with like the interconference play and like how many games we play. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be hard games, and there's going to be a lot of them. So I do think like there'll be injuries, and like there's going to be opportunities for these guys. But yeah, like I want to see that. Like, I think that that could be a big answer for them as well, as if they're able to have more puck moving D. But at the same time, I mean, like, they had two close games against Toronto playing the way that they were. So it's kind of hard to argue with that. So it's tough. That being said, I guess we haven't really we haven't talked about it much since Ottawa hockey's been back, but the kids in Nodak have been looking pretty good. And just still kind of talking about our D, I saw that Clevin and Sanderson actually played a game together, like as partners, with Sanderson on that right side in Nodak. So I think that's kind of promising. If I know Sanderson played on the right side at that U.S. National Development Program previously, so and that's arguably one of the positions of weakness for the Senators moving forward, especially with their prospect depth. So I think that's pretty awesome. That's something to note. I wasn't able to catch the game last night, but what are your thoughts on that, Nick?
I didn't watch the game, but I did see that. And I think Sanderson did slot over on the right side, if I'm not wrong. So that's pretty cool to see. At least he's getting a taste of the other side, see what he can do there. But it is nice to see him paired with Clevin. Maybe that'll be foreshadowing the future and what that might be in Ottawa. But cool to see. And, you know, I'm excited to see their development this year. Obviously, they've been doing pretty well. And Pinto's always on the first line now for North Dakota. So I will keep a tab on these guys, but I haven't really checked the game much last night. You know, we've been craving for hockey before the season, and we've been stuck to our screens watching these guys play, but sort of left them in the dark once the season came back. So I'll have to touch on them again and sort of get an idea where they're at. But I'm excited to see what comes of it, and who knows how this season might go. And then again, COVID and everything with their season might, you know, because they got hit, I think, at the Omaha got hit with COVID back in their pods. So I wonder how COVID's going to affect their season and how they do things. But prayers that it goes well, and who knows, we might see Sanderson play in the NHL at the end of the year.
Yeah, we might just, man, honestly. I know some of the scouting reports that I saw, like, really had Sanderson touted as being one of the most NHL-ready players. And I thought he looked really solid in the World Juniors. Like, he was given a way bigger role than I think a lot of people realized. Like, because he was really slotted in as one of the two number one defenders, I think, for the U.S. I think that Cam
played
York
the most minutes played, too, I think, under Cam York.
Yeah, so the last game, like the gold medal game, played the most minutes out of anyone on Team USA. Cam York, I think, had more for the tournament all around. And like, I actually think Cam York played incredibly well in the tournament. Like, I think that he was probably the state's best defenseman, in my opinion. But he's also, he's a year older. He's been there before. He has the experience. And I really hope that Sanderson gets to return next year, because I think that, like, he could arguably be the captain if he does, because he has that leadership quality. He's captain of the U.S. National Development Program last year. And I think that he would be absolutely incredible. I think that it would be a true testament to his game. But yeah, I mean, I thought that he looked exceptional. And I think that he wasn't tasked with easy things for the U.S. Like, he was constantly working in his own zone. He was one of the leaders for the entire tournament in terms of advanced stats, because of his way that he was able to do controlled zone entries, and like the way that he was able to be such a transitional player. And like, I remember, I can't remember who it was that we were talking to, but they mentioned that with Sanderson, it was like, okay, like he's a defensive player. Like, this is a defenseman. He looks good in his own zone. And then all of a sudden he was like, oh, well, his transition game is pretty good too. He's a good defenseman. He's able to rush the puck. And now it's like, you know what, he might even be finishing off that offensive side. And I really hope that he can close that, because it was decent at the World Juniors, but like, he could have been a bit better offensively, I think. Like, his shot was solid, but I think it could use a bit of work in terms of accuracy. I think the power's there, but I think that's something that's easy to improve. Like, that's something that in terms of all the other tools that he has in his box, like, you can figure out how to be a more accurate shooter. That's something you can practice and get better at. So I think that all in all, though, he's really using his skating to his advantage and his size to his advantage, and he handles the puck well. He sees the game really well. So yeah, I'm super excited for him. And yeah, I'd love to see him in Ottawa. So I don't know how this turned into a big rant on Sanderson, but love the guy and love talking about him any chance I get, I guess.
Yeah, and you know what? If he can at least develop his offensive game, wow, what a complete defenseman we have. And that's scary. I mean, he could be, you know, he could become one of the best defensemen in the NHL one day if he can get his offense sorted out. But even though his offense isn't there right now, I do believe he's still very much capable of being one of the best NHL defensemen one day. He's trending up towards being that guy. So I'm excited to see that and him make the Sens team one day. I think we have a lot of missing pieces to our young Sens team. It's not full there, and that's just so exciting to think that there's still a lot of guys to bring in, and damn, this team is going to be scary in 2 years. So I'm really pumped, man. Really, really pumped.
Me too, man. Me too. We're on the right track for sure.
So we had a discussion with Mark Mathot the other day about, you know, not well, we talked about the current Sens team, but also the Sens team in the past and the 2017 Cup run and how that was like and a bunch of other things. So we'll have his interview plugged in right after here. And this is probably where we'll end this segment of the show. And you guys could just jump in to listen to the Mathot interview. But I just want to thank everyone for listening. And we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Hey, everybody. It's your boy Dave from NewEraSens.com. With me today as co-hosts are Nick and Brennan. We have a really special guest in the house tonight for you guys, former NHLer and Ottawa Senator defender, Mark Mathot. Mark, how's it going over there today, buddy?
Excellent. Thanks for having me, fellas. It's an honor to be a part of this. Awesome.
Man, it's fun watching you on social media. I don't think you never really had a filter. You're always pretty outspoken, but now since retirement, you've come out and been a little more outspoken on social media. You're not so shy like some of the other former NHLers, so it's always fun to watch you on social media. So I'm glad you accepted our invitation. How are you and the family and everybody else dealing with COVID-19 and all that other stuff?
Well, first of all, thanks for the good intro there. That was nice. You know what? We're hanging in there. Obviously, I can't complain. I mean, it's not like I have to go out and find a job right now or that I'm relying on that, whereas a lot of people, including a lot of close friends of mine, are battling with that, and certainly a couple of them that are in the service industry and whatnot. So it's been pretty rough for some people out there. But all that aside, it's just trying to stay stimulated. You know, like I've got two young kids, so just trying to kind of, I guess, keep it together and find a happy routine where I can fit in workouts and watch adult television occasionally that isn't anything on Netflix Kids, you know what I mean? So other than that, though, we're doing great. Everyone's healthy. We can't complain.
So you watched more than just the Christmas Chronicles and stuff like recently? Because that's all I watched, man.
Some of them I don't mind. Like Polar Express, I really like, but it's a little dark for a 3-year-old, I think, but there's, you know, like we watch all the cliche stuff too, like Christmas Vacation and whatnot. But it's like I said, with the kids, it's like you guys, well, some of you know, I'm sure they rule you for the first couple of years. It's a lot of work. It can be challenging, but it's the best thing in the world. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yep.
For sure. So what's a day in the modern Mark Mathot era look like right now?
I don't know if I want to share that.
We're not ready for that behind the scenes content.
I get up usually right away. I'm the first one up, and I'll get up with the two kids. My wife battled through dealing with a lot of the night stuff when I was still playing a couple years ago. So I'm doing the morning stuff now, which is fine because I'm a morning guy anyway. So I get up around like 6:30 and hang out with the kids roughly till noon, 12:30, like all morning. And then they'll usually nap for about 2 hours. And that's when I'm like, I'm already ready to go. I go down into the basement just behind me over there. There's a gym, and I do all my work in there and sauna. And I spend about 2 hours down there every day. And I feel like for me, especially not working, it's just really good stimulation, and it keeps me kind of with it. So I do that. And then I guess the next thing I look forward to is dinner, and I like to cook. So I usually cook almost all the time exclusively. And I look forward to that. And it's really, really monotonous, but I'm hoping that once COVID passes, I can start get into some coaching or something.
Yeah. You've kind of transitioned from a stay-at-home defenseman to a stay-at-home dad. And it's a good mix. I like it.
Nice.
So I got the first question here for you. So thinking of your tenure in Ottawa, it's hard not to think of your meat and potatoes kind of stay-at-home defense partner, Erik Karlsson, obviously. So I guess my big question is, I'm wondering what it was like to play on the ice with Erik on an every night basis, especially during that 2016 season, when he was arguably the best player in the league. Like, what was it like to witness that and just be a part of that? And kind of like, how did you factor into that? And what did you think kind of led to a lot of his on ice success and your success as a whole, as a team and as a unit?
Yeah. When I first got to Ottawa, I'd known enough about him, obviously, just because he was a superstar at this point already. And I know that they were looking for a new partner for him. And so I feel like I kind of put that pressure on myself right away, which maybe was not the smartest thing to do, but I did it anyway. And I came into camp with the frame of mind that I was going to play with this young guy, but I didn't know anything about him. So as camp progressed, I got to know him a little bit. The key takeaways for me was his confidence. His competitive level on the ice was outstanding. I mean, not a kind of guy, like very naturally fit, but not the kind of guy that's going to go in the weight room and just dunk everybody under the table and all the fitness testing. But again, like I said, a freak of nature nonetheless. And from playing with him over those years, it was just, I mean, like I said, at first I was a little nervous, didn't know much about it. I didn't want to let him down or the team down, because all my job was to do really was to defend him, right? And make sure I covered over for him. But Erik was such a dynamic skater that he could get himself out of trouble. Even if he was pinching, you knew that he was going to get back eventually. So that took pressure off of me. But on the bench, extremely vocal, sometimes maybe too vocal. You know, he and I would get into some big FU matches sometimes, because he'd come off the ice and say something to me like, "Meth, you got to pass me that on the blue line," or something like that. And then I'd rebut back saying like, "Dude, I'm not Paul Coffey. Like, I can't read the ice like Paul fucking Coffey here. Pardon my French." So, you know, we butt heads eventually after a while. Cause you know, when you're around the same guys all the time, it is what it is, right? You get competitive and you get comfortable and you start to fight like brothers occasionally. But I think that's what made our chemistry so strong and made us such a successful pairing.
That's awesome. And I think it's pretty obvious that you guys had a lot of success. You ask any Sens fans, I think that's the most famous pairing in history, I think, if people will point out. So it's just really awesome to see. You have such a good time and playing with such a talented player. And as yourself, you know, you're talented as well. But my next question, I just wanted to ask you, because you're obviously from Ottawa. And so you didn't start your career in Ottawa. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, the whole process of moving here and what it meant for you to play in Ottawa. And your initial reaction to hearing you were traded here.
Yeah, it's a funny story. I was at home. I was living in Mooney's Bay area here in South Ottawa in the city. And I had a house there, but I was on my own at the time. And it was on Canada Day, and that was free agency, right? So Canada Day's rolling around, and I'm having this get-together. I guess it was a party. There's like 40 people coming to my house, and we were going to have it in the backyard on the patio. And I had a DJ coming by too. And
it's a bad dad.
Anyway, long story short, we're scanning the TV before people start rolling in. And I think Broussard or someone was over at the house at the time before everybody came over, or maybe it was my brother. I don't remember, but I remember watching the ticker on TSN. And there was a reporter out of Columbus that said that after we had drafted, that young Murray kid on defense, he's like, "Mark Mathot is now expendable," or something like that. And I thought, oh God, like, I didn't take offense to it. I just, I was surprised, you know, I didn't think I was going anywhere. And so time's kind of ticking by, and eventually the party just gets started. And at this point, it's like 1:30, I think, in the afternoon. And I checked Twitter, and Bob McKenzie tweets out that the deal between Columbus and Ottawa is done. So right away, my heart sinks into my stomach, because I'm like, oh my God, like, I loved Columbus and I loved everything about it, but to play in your hometown is another animal. And I was so excited. So sure as shit, I look at my phone and I see that Mathot for Foligno had been confirmed. And I just like, I was like elated. And, but I found out that way before a GM called me or a coach or anybody. So I'm like, do I keep drinking or do I wait? What do I do? And then, I think Brian Murray called me first. We had a really good conversation together. And then finally Scott Housen from Columbus called me and it confirmed after the fact. But anyway, it's one of the best days of my life. I still remember how I felt that day in the moment and it was incredible. And if I could go back and relive that day again, I would in a heartbeat.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think one of the most famous moments in your tenure in Ottawa was the chop to the hand by Sid the Kid. So two things.
What does that say about my career anyway?
but it's your career was, people always remember the crazy, right? Not the good, the crazy. So like, and everyone just has that picture of you skating by and your finger just dangling, right? So that's kind of, first off, do you still have full mobility of the finger? And two, have you talked to Sid since? Like, have you guys made peace or like, do you have like a troll account that you like send them like like that? Like
a burner account?
No, so after the fact, after it happened, first of all, my fingers, it's still not even close to my good one. I mean, I don't have full sensation there. I mean, it's like all the nerve endings haven't completely recovered. I don't know if they ever will, but it kind of looks like more of a stub than my good one, but you wouldn't really, you know, to any random person walking by, they probably wouldn't think anything of it if they saw it. It healed very well. The doctors did a good job with it. But Sydney, I got along well with him when we met at the Olympic camp in Calgary. I was invited to the preliminary camp where there was like 20 defensemen or whatever it was, and X amount of forwards. And I got to sit with him at one of the dinners and we had a good chat. We were talking. This is well before, obviously. And then, so we always got along fine. And what he did on the ice wasn't malicious. It was a slash, but he wasn't intending on chopping my finger off. Right. So, but he reached out to me about a week after the fact when it did happen and it was a text. But at that point I was so angry and resentful that I never replied to him. I regret that. I was in so much friggin' pain every night, like day to day. It was an unrelenting pain. I've had broken my jaw. I've had back pains. I've had tons of lacerations all over my face. I've lost teeth, but this is one of the most painful injuries I think I've ever had. And, so he reaches out to me a week after, and in the moment I'm thinking, why did he wait a week to reach out to me? Not that he had any reason to have to do that. I wasn't expecting it, but nonetheless, I was going through a lot of shit at the time. I was pissed off, and it was about a month before playoffs, so I had that to look forward to with a broken hand. But it was an accident, and stuff happens, and I moved on from it.
So, like, why don't you pick up your phone now and reply to that specific text? You're like, I'm good. Don't worry about it, man.
You know what? I've thought about it, but. I'm a complete pigeon in the grand scheme of things when it comes to Sydney's world and what he knows and does. So I'm for sure an afterthought at this point for him. And that's fine. But I don't plan on writing back to him. It's all good.
He's done a lot to Senators fans over the years, like playoffs and stuff like that. But he's hated by us because of what he did to your finger. Like, that is, someone asked me, why don't you like Crosby? And I go, have you not seen the video of Mark skating with his finger? What do you mean, why do I hate Crosby?
Yeah, it was a little. It's all, like I said, though, like I don't want to sound dramatic. It's over with. I'm good with it now. I'm at peace with it. I can sleep at night now knowing that I'll be okay.
Awesome.
Might not be able to grip a pencil, but that's
okay. Thank God it's my left hand, right?
There you go. We all got one. So moving on a bit. So I grew up as a Kitchener Ranger fan, living here. And, the first time I got to see you play was when you were actually playing for the London Knights, on that iconic team, that had Corey Perry, Robbie Schrempf. I guess a whole lot of other guys I could list off here, but, I believe you guys won a Memorial Cup that year. And I guess I was just curious, if you could kind of take us through that experience. And then I'm also curious what it was like to be under Dale Hunter. And I was wondering if you have any stories about that and like, just what it was like, in those really important development years of your life, to be a part of his team?
So I was drafted by London in what, 2002, I think, or no, 2001, maybe. God, I don't even remember. But my first year was in 03, and I played 3 years in London. And Dale drafted me. In that draft year, we had quite a few guys. I mean, I can try to name drop, but half of them people wouldn't even remember anyway, I don't think so. Yeah. But we had about six NHL draft picks alone my draft year that was drafted by London. And that itself was amazing. So we had a very deep team, and there were other guys. We had Dan Girardi, David Bolin, Brandon Prust, Drew Larman, who was also a draft pick at the time and played a little bit in the NHL. And I'm trying to think of other guys. Our goaltender was drafted. You know, the list went on. So we had a really deep team. And Dale, as a coach, who was my head coach at the time, very intimidating, but like a player's guy. Wasn't a screamer, very quiet. Didn't have to scream because everyone was scared shitless of him, right? It was Dale Hunter. And, the kind of guy, it's funny. I remember going, we all went to his house one day for a team party, and the kind of guy that had a stationary bicycle in his sauna. And I mean, I'm a sauna guy. I use it every day. I'm religious about it. This guy had a psycho. had a stationary bike in a sauna, and all the old school guys like Chelios, you've heard stories, or at least I have, of him sweating it out with like a garbage bag over him in a sauna. So Dale was that kind of guy. He was very old school, built like a truck, like this refrigerator. He had these calves on him, like they were this big. And
Nicholson.
Yeah, and like I appreciated it, you know, because I'm this young player getting in there, and I'm a little beanpole. And I'm looking at this ex-NHL player who's been through the ringer, and but nothing but respect for him. He's extremely professional. And what they did in London was great. They created a pro-style environment that was the best type of setup for any player that was planning on, you know, progressing as a professional. So we were very fortunate there. And at the time when I joined, that was the first year of the John Labatt Center, which was their brand new building downtown in London, Ontario, as opposed to the old truck stop ice house that they had prior to me getting there. So everything just kind of aligned at the right time. It was pretty incredible. And then I won't get into it for too long, but with the Mem Cup, we got the chance to play against Sidney Crosby that year. And Shea Weber was also in it with Kelowna, I believe, at the time. And so there were some pretty good players involved in the tournament, and some close games too. And what an experience, because it was the NHL lockout that year. So everything was just magnified, right? Like we had a lot of people in town, a lot of scouts, a lot of national press, and it made the experience incredible. And I mean, probably the highlight of my life as far as hockey goes. I mean, and there are a lot of really cool NHL experiences that I've had, but nothing tops that.
Yeah.
Awesome. And another team that you obviously played for that was really successful is the team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals in 2017. Obviously, we all know how that went down, losing in double overtime against Pittsburgh. I did double check. You weren't on the ice, so that's probably why we lost. But I just want to ask you, you know, what was your fondest memory of that run? And, you know, how close were the guys in the locker room? And was there like a sort of an energy that came with you guys and just a belief that you guys could go far?
We were so tight, you know. And they brought in a bunch of good veterans as well to help out, and I hate doing this because I always forget guys, but Dion was a big one for us. With FNUF, he was such a gregarious kind of presence in the room, and he was almost to the point where it was like cartoonish, you know. Like it was like he was just such a motivator, and he wasn't shy to call guys out, and he wasn't shy to like speak his mind in the room, and loved being around the guys and loved having beers with the guys. Like just a great guy to have. And I hated him prior. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say that. I didn't hate him, but one of my first NHL fights was against Dion. You know, he was in Calgary and folded Umberger from behind, and I had to jump him, and we'd still laugh about that. But I got a chance to play with Dion at the World Championships prior to him getting traded to Ottawa. So at this point, I was already pretty close with him. And beyond Dion, we had guys like Stahlberg and a lot of veterans that were already there in place, like MacArthur and other guys. So we had a really solid base and a good system. You know, like we had a great system that we were playing there. I know that it got criticized quite a bit, but after the fact, perhaps, you know, the following year, but it worked really well for us. And that lefty lock that we were playing with, like me, Burrow, and Dion on the left side, it was like perfect. It was catered to our team. So a lot of good experience that year. And I think, you know, in the moment, you don't really appreciate what's going on. You know, we're in game seven of the Eastern Conference Final, one goal away. And in that moment, you're not thinking about anything. You're completely zoned into the game. And it ends, and then you're just shocked. You're in shock. Some guys are, you know, breaking down a little bit in the room after, because you have a good inkling that you may not get an opportunity ever again to be in that position, to make it that far. So, you know, a lot of guys put a lot into this, and it can get pretty rough sometimes when you're let down, and that's part of the game.
I was in Hawaii for the first two series of that. Awesome. And I managed to get a trip to Hawaii, paid for. It was a long story, but I ended up watching the first two, the Boston and the Rangers series, poolside in Hawaii. And there was this little mat to dry your feet on before you go into the house.
Yeah.
And I stood there for 3 hours, because whenever I stood on there, we won. I'm not kidding. The wife has pictures of me standing there in videos watching the game from that little 2x2 mat watching you guys play. So
Dave's taking credit for the win series. All because they won his mat.
I'm gonna assume obviously you're still a Sens fan, you live in the city. Do you follow the organization and what's going on and all that other stuff? And you still talk to guys on the teams and stuff still?
Yeah. Well, the first question to touch on the Sens, I don't watch a ton of hockey right now. The kids go down at like 7:30, 8 o'clock, and I have about an hour and a half before I go to bed. And it's like, I just don't have time. So I might watch a show on Netflix and I just go to bed. So I follow a lot in the morning. I'll watch the highlights. I follow everything online on my phone. I check the stats out, see what the media guys are saying about certain players. I still talk to a lot of guys. I still talk to Mark Stone and Derek Brassard quite a bit. I was talking to Dzingel the other day. A bunch of guys actually reached out to me after what was I tweeting about? I wrote something pretty controversial online. I forget what it was about. I think it was about outdoor rinks or something. And whatever it was. Anyway, but a bunch of guys reached back out to me and kind of initiated a little conversation. But I think that's what I miss the most, right? It's just the banter, being around with the guys on the road, going to dinner the night before the game, and then going back to my room and watching a movie in the room and going to bed. Like, those are the little things that you never really appreciated at the time. And God, if I could keep playing and be able to experience that again, it'd be unbelievable. But, you know, aside from all that, yeah, I mean, those guys are all doing great. They've all moved on. It's pretty incredible that almost the entire team now from 2017 isn't, you know, it's non-existent. So a lot has changed.
Well, speaking of the change, like, you obviously, like I said, you're getting the updates on your phone, stuff like that. Is there anything that you've seen the Sens do that you're like, man, that's a really good move, or man, that's a really bad move, stuff like that? Any players that you kind of fancy right now or anything?
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I like them bringing in Gudbranson. You know, it'll be interesting to see. I didn't pay much attention to him last year or the year before, so I don't know where his game's at. But I think having a tougher presence back there just to steady things up a little bit, especially with a younger group on D, won't hurt. And I'm sure that goes against what a lot of people want to hear. But I think having at least one guy is important. and then you got that Stützle. I was watching Stützle in the World Juniors and pretty impressed with him, man. Like, a guy that age, just mature beyond his years hockey-wise. And I think the fans are – I don't want to go too far, because I feel like we've already put so much pressure on this kid because there's nothing else to talk about. So
yeah.
Twitter was blowing up there for about 2 weeks all about him, and now he's finally at camp. And I hope people can understand that, you know, there will be growing pains, I'm sure, with young guys like him and with the rest of the team too, right? So but other than that, like – I'm kind of fresh here. I got to start paying attention and watching them. I mean, usually with training camp, there's a little more news. It's a little longer. You can watch exhibition games and get a feel for where everyone's at. But this is a new dynamic now. Like, it's just like throwing all these guys into the fire and seeing what they can do.
Yeah. You can go. Oh, I was just going to say, though, it's funny that you bring up Goodbranson, because a lot of people sort of compare him to, you know, the situation when we brought you in Ottawa. Another Ottawa guy, obviously a stay-at-home defense and can play the physical side. And a lot of people are saying, you know what, he could probably be Shabbat's new partner and sort of pull strains from the Carlson and Mathot pairing. So it's really cool to sort of see that come to fruition. And I just wanted to point that out real quick.
Yeah, no, I've read that too. I think someone tagged me in one of those posts online, and I wish Goody all the best. He's a good guy. And with Shabby now coming into his own, and, you know, guys like him now at his age aren't necessarily the young guys anymore, right? I mean, the way the NHL is kind of trending, you know, he's likely going to be in his prime pretty soon. So the timing of it is really good. And I like that the Sens brought in someone to kind of back him up a little bit and provide a little bit of support. So, yeah, I'm like you guys. I'll be a fan here, and I'm going to be watching and hoping they do well, because, I mean, God, I think everyone needs this right now. It's pretty lonely times without hockey.
For sure. I guess, touching on that a bit, you miss being around the boys, you miss being in the rink, and you clearly are still in prime shape right now, the way that your biceps are popping out. So what, at this point, you still haven't technically retired, have you?
No, well, yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't want the attention. I didn't want to have to wait like a year later and then be like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm done playing now. It just didn't feel right. So I just wanted to go away kind of quietly and gracefully. And, but yeah, I'm done. I mean, I tried coming back before last season. I had been skating at Minto Arena in Ottawa. I was renting the ice to myself and trying to work through it. Could I have managed? Maybe. I'm sure I could have made a team, I think, if I'd pushed it enough, but it just wasn't worth it to put myself in that kind of position where I might potentially make my knee much worse. And I mean, right now I can still play with my kids. I can still run up and down the slopes at Mooney's Bay and push my kid on the toboggan. And I mean, I don't know if I'd be able to do that had I kept on for another year or two. So I think I made the right call. It was very difficult for me, but I think I made the right decision.
So I guess my next question, kind of on that note, then, do you see yourself potentially down the road, maybe looking at a career in hockey? Like, I know, like, I think right now it kind of seems like you're really just enjoying taking advantage of the things that you didn't really get to do as much when you're on the road. And yeah. I appreciate that. I think that that's really important. You have young kids, and to have that as a primary focus is extremely respectable. But I think that on top of, so yeah, honestly, like, kudos to you for that. But, on top of that, I mean, you seem like the kind of guy that you just love that environment. You love being around that, and I'm sure, like, you're successful in it. You see the game well. You have great hockey sense. Is that something that you could see yourself being interested in, whether it's coaching, scouting, or something like that down the road? And what do you think would be ideal for Mark Mathot?
Yeah, no, I've thought about it. I mean, guys like myself, guys that have played, especially in a position where I never went to university after junior, right? I jumped right into pro hockey, so I don't have nothing really else to fall back on. Not that I need that, but as far as stimulating my mind, which I believe is incredibly important. I mean, I'm 35. I can't sit around every day for the next 25 years, right? So I got to find something to do. And if there's anything I can do with my resume, it's hockey related, right? So at some point when this nightmare clears up and things kind of get back to normal, I'd like to probably hit up a coach's clinic. I'm going to have to, because it's regulation for coaching at any level. And so that's about a weekend course, I think. And I'd like to start off kind of small and do like the local, like, AAA teams or something, and just kind of get my feet wet there. Because once you get into junior and pro, the travel's crazy. And from my experience with coaches, and a lot of people don't realize that, coaching staff, you know, at the professional level, they're there from like 7 a.m. until about 4, 5, 6 in the afternoon, usually in the evening, and it's every single day, and the weekends included. So it's very time consuming, is essentially what I'm getting at. Whereas I think if I start off small with maybe minor hockey, I can kind of see if I like it or not. And as far as scouting goes, completely out of the question. You couldn't pay me enough money to do that. I have so much respect for those guys. But it's the travel and the driving. It's just not for me. So we'll see. I don't know what it's going to look like, but at some point I got to get back to doing something.
I was going to say that the TSN 1200 guys might bring you on, because I know you're a reoccurring guest on there, and they quite love you. And so that's also a choice, I think.
And I'd love to do that. And I've talked to them before about it, and kudos to them because they're always very professional with me. But, and it's not necessarily just up to me that we need a spot available, but at the same time, that requires me to watch a ton of hockey and a ton of sports in general, which I have a hard enough time as it is following my local team. So I love getting on the radio and just talking, but I have to bring something to the table. And if I have absolutely zero knowledge about the teams, I'm not very useful. So we'll see.
All right. So I'll go ahead with my last question. This is actually something I'm curious about because you didn't wear a visor, I think, for your whole career. So I was just wondering, it never crossed your mind to just want to put a visor one time after taking a stick to the face or anything?
Man, yeah. Yeah. So when I came in to pro, stay-at-home D-men never wore visors. You just didn't do it. And if you did, you know, you're basically called a pussy. So I'm like, okay, I guess I can't wear a visor. And it's not like I was overly tough or anything. You got to fit in. You got to make your mark. So it started that way. And once I started doing that, you get used to not wearing one and you get more comfortable with it. So from then on, it just became a habit. I couldn't wear one. I hated coming off the ice after every shift and wiping sweat off the visor, right? My mom pleaded with me for years to put one on. I think for about 5 or 6 games in the American League in my third year, or maybe it was in the NHL level. No, in Columbus, sorry. My first year in Columbus, I think toward the end of the season, I put one on for a couple games. Couldn't do it, took it off. If I could tell my kids how to do it, I would make sure they wore one. Because yeah. Some of the injuries I've had still affect me. You know, I've broken my nose a couple times, so I have brutal sleep apnea. I've broken my jaw. I don't think a visor would have helped there, but all the lacerations around my eyes and nose, it's not fun. So I don't encourage kids to do that. I don't even think they're allowed to do it anymore, so it's not an issue.
So just to kind of touch back on the TSN thing, all I'm saying is I have no problem creating a YouTube show called The Method with Meth. If you want to come on, if you want to come on once a month, man, just saying.
Yeah, hey, for sure. I'm down. I'm not even just saying that. I'd love to. Nothing else to say.
Exactly. I'll send you a tweet on that. Don't worry.
Sounds good.
So, and for me to finish up, I want to ask you, we do a thing called story time. Is there story that stands out to you, like something funny or something crazy, you know, hotel room on the road, the locker room on the ice, just anything that's not the dangling finger? Do you have,
oh God,
something that maybe something that never hit the media or something that just wasn't talked about? Just give us something juicy.
I remember an old story. Well, I hate throwing a guy under the bus here, but I was a call up and I was playing with Columbus at the time and we were in Colorado. And we were on the ice, and LaPerriere, there was a loose puck around the net. And instead of me running to him and basically cross-checking him as hard as I could to clear him out, I tried to get him, but with my hands or whatever it was, and he jammed the puck in, they scored. And we had Adam Foote at the time was still playing, and he was our captain. And he was sitting beside me in the dressing room. So I'm sitting there, you know, after, you know, in the intermission. And I think it was Claude Noel. I hate saying this because Claude, more or less, I get along great with him, but he was a competitive coach, came in the room and screamed at me in front of the entire team, you know, to do something. And, you know, you got to get that, you know, effing guy out of the way. You got to crush it, whatever it was. But it was, you know, he embarrassed me, but nothing I wasn't used to at the time. That was pretty normal then. You don't see that kind of stuff anymore, but it still happens occasionally. But anyway, Adam Foote, right in front of our coach, as he was just walking away, was like, hey, Meth, you know, I'm not, can I swear on this podcast? Probably not.
We'll beep it out if we have.
Okay, yeah. So Footer looks over at me. I still remember this because I looked up to him at the time, right? And he goes, Matt, fuck that guy. Don't listen to him. He has no idea what he's talking about. And Claude was still walking away. And it made me feel good because he had my back. You know, it's not like, and again, no, I had no ill feelings towards Claude. And that was a good way for coaches sometimes to liven up the dressing room. So again, I'm not trying to call him out, but that was a prime example of a young guy in the league where you have this grizzled old veteran who wasn't shy to speak up and defend his teammate. And that's what you look for in captains, right? And that's the kind of behavior you expect from your captain. So that's something that kind of still sticks with me. I've got a lot of other stories, but maybe one day if I'm drinking some beers with you guys, they'll come out. But I gotta keep them inside.
If we do the method with meth, I'll send you a 12-pack before, man. Man. So that pretty much concludes what we have for today, man. I really want to thank you for your time, the cool stories. You were one of the most energetic guys on Twitter, and ex and Ottawa Senator player, sorry, that I really wanted to get on the show. So when you're like, yeah, man, I'll come on, I was really excited. Just stay with cool. The rest of the boys. So again, thanks for your time. As for our listeners and viewers, if you like this video, click the like button and don't forget to subscribe. Have a good night, guys.